Now, ironically, I got about a year into the course and decided I don't want to do this for a career. And I was like, I cannot drop out twice in 2 years on my parents. So I was like, I'm going to stick this one out and I'm going to get my qualifications.
Hey, everyone. It's the Lady J, or Jordan. I don't even really know why I keep using that moniker. I'm not really using it anywhere else. Well, whatever. Hey, everyone. It's me. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of I Never Told You What I Do for a Living, the podcast about work, even from home. This week, I'm going all in on the one thing that seems to come up every week, wrestling. I'm joined by a lovely person from Ireland who I'd first interviewed back in 2017 as part of the Facelock Feministas, which was a female-hosted wrestling podcast. Katie Harvey was an absolute joy to speak to then, and this week's chat is no different. We recorded this a few weeks ago, so the future of Ireland's plans for lifting the lockdowns were still uncertain. As of May 18th, the Irish government began phase one of a five-part plan to reopen the country. So I'm excited to see how the plans Katie discusses in this episode come to fruition. Let's take a dive right into episode 33 of I Never Told You What I Do for a Living with Katie, the wrestler. How you doing, Katie?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I don't even. How does anyone answer that question anymore?
Existing has been something I've been using recently.
That's totally fair. So I always start the podcast with the same question. So we'll start in the place we normally do, and then we'll see where the conversation takes us. So I always begin with, what is your earliest childhood memory of what you wanted to be when you grew up?
So the earliest childhood memory I had is I wanted to be a Power Ranger.
Nice.
Yeah, I was obsessed with the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger film that came out in like 95, I want to say. And it was just really cool. And, you know, it just blew my mind seeing that on the cinema screen. So I enrolled in karate classes immediately, you know, to get a head start on my training.
That's really awesome.
It was really cool. There was something close to me that even at that age, I felt I could facilitate what I wanted to be. In hindsight, I would have taken like gymnastics and stuff and, you know, but karate was a good start. I ended up doing it for maybe 15 years.
So your parents were supportive of you wanting to be a Power Ranger?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It got me out of the house. It got me playing sport. It got me, kept me out of trouble. Yeah, they were very supportive.
Did they make you feel like school was important?
School was very important to me anyway. Generally, my parents have been really good and supportive of anything I've wanted to do. Which is good because, you know, I've taken some weird paths over the last few years. But school was always important to me and to them, and basically just go and get an education. And they always said to me, if you want to go to college, we'll look after you till you finish. So that was always a really nice safety net to have. In Ireland, it's a little bit different. We don't have massive fees. We don't tend to really get into debt in college. But it was still nice that they were saying, like, you'll have a place to live. We'll give you an allowance. We'll, you know, make sure you have what you need until you finish college.
What about the adults that you were encountering at school? Were they supportive of whatever it was that you might want to pursue? Or were they just trying to, like, get people through the system?
Again, I was pretty lucky with the school I ended up going to. Our secondary school, which I think would be the equivalent of high school. I went to what was technically an underprivileged school, and it was the community school where everyone could go. And because of that, they put a big focus, not just on academia, they put a big focus on lots of different career paths. So, you know, I took electronics classes, woodwork, art and music were actually compulsory in the school I went to, which was really nice. So they gave us kind of a broad thing to do. And they set up a program such as like going to college for a week, where they paid all our expenses just to expose us to college to see if that's something we wanted to pursue. So So generally, I was pretty lucky with the support I had grown up to do things.
Did you go to college?
I ended up going to many colleges because even with all this support, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So the way we do it in Ireland is when you're about 17, you fill out a CAO form. So basically you list the college courses you want to get into, then you do your exams, you gather points, and if you get enough points, you go to the course. So at that time I was dead set on being a lawyer. So 9 of my top 10 career choices was to do law. And I missed out on every single course by 5 points. So basically like one question on my exam, which left me going to just a general arts course in college, which I ended up not enjoying because it was a last resort. It was number 10 on my form, literally to fill up the form. I never thought it would end up going that low for me. So I only lasted about a year doing art history, politics, and liberal arts. And while the course content was really nice and I enjoyed it, I didn't see what career I wanted out of it. And in my mind, I think 17 is too young to make that big decision. So I ended up bouncing around a few colleges. I got a TV and film production diploma. I've got various fitness courses and management courses now. In the end, I think it worked out better because I have skills in lots of different industries. But at the time, it was very scary to be 17 and trying to decide the rest of your life.
What was the atmosphere around going to college? Like you said that your parents said they would support you if you wanted to go. When you were still in school, were your teachers like, everyone goes to college? Like that, because I mean, that's how it is here in the States. So I'm just curious what it's like in Ireland.
In Ireland, we have a couple of different options, and it's not so much you need to go get a 4-year degree. It's you just need to do something. You need to have a plan. So apprenticeships are very popular in Ireland. So especially if you want to become like a plumber or electrician or something like that, you go to do an apprenticeship, or we have lots of PLC courses. And what they are is they're like a year stopgap course as soon as you finish school, which will just give you an additional skill and time to think before you go do your 4-year degree. So that could be like building a portfolio for art college. So you would go to a PLC for a year to do that, or you would go just to get like more math skills if you wanted to pursue that. So in Ireland, it's not so much you need to get a degree. It's you just need to have a plan once you leave school to either do one of the paths available.
That sounds pretty good, though.
It is. Now, I think there's problems with the actual exams and stuff that lead you there. Like, for example, they back end everything into your leaving cert. So the points you get in your leaving cert, it decides what path you take. Right now, for example, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, they've just pushed those exams back 2 months. But the kids haven't been in school for months. So they're going to get their college course and the rest of their life mapped out based on this one exam that they're not properly prepared for. So I like continuous assessment, I think, would be a better plan. But once you kind of get past the exams, we do have good systems for getting people qualified and into their careers.
So you mentioned that you have lots of different certifications now. When you decided to that you weren't happy in the college program that you were going to, how did you make decisions on what you wanted to pursue to make yourself happier than what you were?
The next course I did, in which I stayed in for 3 years and finished, was the TV and film production course. And I had had a friend go into that straight after school. And just from talking to him and talking to my other friends, I was like, this is something I could really sink my teeth into. To be honest, I don't know why I wanted to be a lawyer in the first place. I'm a big true crime fan. Like I look into true crime a lot. So I think it was stemming from that. But realistically, I've never been the kind of person who like feels comfortable in an office or 9 to 5. Like I've always done shift work my entire life. So I think just by talking to him and seeing how his life was laid out, you know, working in TV and film, it seemed really interesting. I love writing and being creative. I love planning and organizing. And because it was a weird schedule, all of that really appealed to me. So that's kind of why I decided to go the TV and film production route. Now, ironically, I got about a year into the course and decided I don't want to do this for a career. And I was like, I cannot drop out twice in 2 years on my parents. So I was like, I'm going to stick this one out and I'm going to get my qualifications. Which I did. And to be fair, a lot of the stuff I'd done in that course, I use all the time now, because we did a lot of stuff on like marketing, social media, and just even the basic planning and organization stuff. That's benefited me through my whole life now. So I'm glad I stuck the course out, even if I didn't become a massive film director.
I don't know if they use this term in Ireland, but in the US, something they would probably apply to what you're talking about is soft skills, meaning like the things that you learn that aren't like, I have the skill of being a community manager for a social channel. It's more like communication skills and organization skills and things like that. Things that don't look like they have a direct application, but they actually directly apply to everything once you get out there into the field. And I feel like when I talk to people on this podcast, there are more and more people who say the things that I learned in college were not the things that I was necessarily studying for, but they are skills that I have applied to everything I have done beyond school.
Yeah, that's absolutely my experience from that course. Especially because when I would have went to college about 10 years ago, social media wasn't as big, and the benefits you could have from using social media to promote yourself and promote businesses. But I still learned skills such as, you know, like how to make an advert, what content should go in, how things should look, how to get funding, that kind of thing. So that's definitely become really, really beneficial in the last few years. For the different things I've been involved in. So yeah, I think definitely for me, the soft skills were the most important things I learned.
So what did you do once you got your degree?
I went to college again. For the third time. Between the two colleges, I just kind of floundered about between a few different jobs, because the film industry in Ireland is really hard to crack onto. So this was like pre-Game of Thrones. So the film industry is actually dying. That's what kind of like reinvigorized it over here. So it was really hard. What I was looking at was many years of unpaid work, you know, for exposure, to just try get my foot in the door to get some paid jobs. And I was just honest with myself and I wasn't willing to do it. I wasn't willing to put in that much work for the chance of making a career in the Irish film industry. So I kind of rethought about everything again, and I had just come out of a really kind of bad relationship. So, you know, when you make drastic decisions after a really bad relationship, and I decided I'm going to become a professional wrestler. So what I did then was I decided to do a fitness instruction course. So I was going to pursue fitness instruction and wrestling then. So that was my next course, last course, final course.
Okay. So how did you go from bad relationship to professional wrestler?
Literally just thought, you know what? I'm 21. I've wasted the last 4 years in a bad relationship. I had turned down opportunities. As I mentioned, I'd been doing karate for like 15 years at that stage, and I had qualified for the European Championships in Milan. And
wow.
The guy I was with at the time wouldn't allow me to go. So I didn't go. And it is probably my biggest regret. Even my parents went on that trip because my brother had qualified for the same championships. I couldn't believe I let that opportunity get away from me. I was so angry at myself. So when we broke up, I was like, I've always wanted to wrestle. It's kind of an extension of the Power Ranger thing. And I had done some work as a stunt person on Vikings. So I was like, I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to pursue wrestling because I don't want to miss any other big opportunities.
Did you know anybody at that point who was a wrestler?
I had watched a local company to me for years. And ironically, one of the guys I used to watch is now my partner. So I was aware there was a local school and a local scene because I'd watched it growing up. And then when I was in the film college, one of my best friends there, I discovered, as a massive wrestling fan. So one of our college projects was to pick something in the community to make a documentary about, and we picked the local wrestling school. So that's how we kind of got back in touch with everyone and found the lay of the land. And we both ended up training, and we never made the documentary. there's still just a load of raw footage somewhere because the two of us got so immersed in training that we just never finished it. I'm not even sure what we handed in instead, to be honest, but that documentary never got made.
So if you were doing training through a wrestling school, why did you decide to also take on like athletic training as well?
For me, it was important if I was going to do it to the best of my ability. So I figured that being a fitness instructor would be a good side job because, again, if you're a personal trainer, you can make your own hours. You have a certain flexibility with your schedules. You have the added bonus of just having more knowledge about your body regarding injuries and stuff. And also just general fitness. So I would teach like 15 fitness classes a week. So I would just be getting myself in the best condition I could for wrestling. For me, they were nice partners. They went side by side if I was going to try pursue both.
I hope this doesn't sound insulting because some people hate this word, but it sounds like you're a very practical person.
Oh, no, I can take that as a compliment. I'm a big list person. So if there's something I want to do, I try break it down to lists and small individual steps, because then if I can tick off the small steps, it's more achievable. It's easier for me to get there. So I suppose that's my thinking going into everything. So at wrestling, it was like, okay, well, I'll do the fitness instructor training. I've got my film background, you know, that might help with promos and stuff. And then I've got the actual wrestling training going on. So I kind of just decided to try go for it to the best of my ability.
When pursuing both of these things simultaneously, what was your feeling about money? Because I feel like when I talk to people who have had to be freelance or work on an hourly rate, there's always some kind of concern about how am I going to make sure that I'm making enough to support myself.
That is something I definitely struggled with the fitness industry. I love personal training, but I only pursued that aspect for about a year because, again, the uncertainty. There's lots of fitness instructors in Ireland. It's a really popular course. So certain gyms start to take advantage of this by offering unpaid internships. So most people coming out of college would have to go into one of these unpaid internships because they had no experience to get a paying job. So I got caught in that. And then I finished the internship and I was able to start taking my own clients. And for me, it was just too risky. If someone was sick, they had to cancel. You don't get paid. If someone went on holiday, you don't get paid for that week or two. So I went to a different, more commercial gym and I got shift work, hourly shift work. And then eventually moved into management in the gym. So for me, that's been a lot better because I've always had that safety net of having my bills paid, but still having the flexibility of being able to pursue wrestling.
Do you like being in a management position?
I actually really do. I would find it hard to go back onto the floor at this stage because, again, it uses a lot of the skills that I developed in college. So I'm the studio coordinator of my gym, which is basically I make the timetables, I train the instructors, any promotions that happen in the gym, any special events, I would coordinate all them. So for me, it's the best of both worlds because I can still teach classes, which has always been my main passion in the fitness industry. I can still take clients if I want. So I still have one or two that I take regularly. But then I also get to sit down and I get to create these events. The gym I work in is a community. So I get to create events that create this community. And I get lots of kind of FaceTime with members and stuff, which I really like. So I think without having a clear plan, I've actually ended up in a position I'm really, really happy with.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's worked out well, considering I thought I'd be a lawyer at 18. So,
well, I also know that for some people going into a management role, while it sounds good and the pay is usually better, like once they're not as actively doing the thing the manager is managing, then they're like, oh, this isn't as fun anymore.
Yeah, that was something I did worry about. And I worried about suddenly managing people who had been peers. Because on a gym team, our gym team is very small. There was only maybe 8 or 9 of us. So I actually decided to move to a different branch to take the management role because I just thought managing my friends would be too weird and I'd potentially ruin friendships. And I wanted to give the manager's role a really good go. So I moved to a different branch where I managed about 8 people. And there was that initial struggle as a new manager of, will I be their friend or will I be their manager or where is the line here? So that was something I struggled with. And there's definitely been some things that I haven't enjoyed doing, but I've had to learn to do. But then on the flip side, I've built a really good team. So those incidents have become few and far between, the nasty stuff that I have to deal with.
So while you were working on all of this, you were also training to become a professional wrestler, which you are now.
Yes. Right now I'm a wrestler, and I mentioned that my partner was a wrestler. We actually run a wrestling school in Dublin together now as well.
How did you decide to start that?
He was actually already running it, and I joined the school. So technically he was my instructor. We've been together about 9 years now. So it was just kind of natural once we start going out that I start helping with the running and things. So yeah, we're here 9 years later, and we're running the wrestling school, obviously on hiatus at the minute, but you know, we're doing really good work. Some of our trainees have got to WWE already. So there's some nice success going on there.
When you started working as a trainer at the wrestling school, where were you in your like athletic training? Was it happening simultaneously, or had you already gotten to the management position by the time you started training people for wrestling?
They kind of happened simultaneously, which was nice. And it's probably not a coincidence, because I think the skills I learned from helping run the wrestling school definitely made me more impressive in my day job, because we were running shows and stuff. I was looking after people. We were scheduling stuff. We were, you know, producing shows. And a lot of that I could transfer over to my regular job. So when I interviewed, I was quite confident on, okay, well, you need me to run events. I know how to run events. You know, this is what I do. This is my process. This is how I manage people. So it's probably not a coincidence that the two happened simultaneously. For about maybe the first 2 or 3 years, I was just wrestling. And then I started helping coach and run. Same with fitness instructing. I was a fitness instructor for 2 or 3 years, and then I moved into management. So it happened around the same time.
So you're kind of running like three different, or helming three different businesses, right? So you have the management position, the wrestling school, and then your own career as a wrestler.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. When you put it like that, it's kind of a lot on my plate, but they're also interlinked. It doesn't feel like three separate jobs, especially with the school and my own wrestling career. They're very much interlinked, because most of the things I do are geared towards the school now. I had a bad injury last year that I'd only actually just come back from before all the wrestling shows got shut down again. So I had about a year where I could just focus on the school.
I'm so sorry, but can you just tell the people who are listening to this podcast what your injury was? Because I have never in my life been so frightened for another person watching what happened to you and then seeing all of your pictures on Instagram afterwards. I could not believe that you came back as fast as you did from what happened.
So I did a move off the top rope where I jumped from the top rope to the floor and didn't get caught, hit the floor, and I ended up dislocating both my elbows. I smashed the radial head bone in both my arms, and I dislocated all the muscles in my left arm. I also found out about 2 or 3 months ago that I actually dislocated my wrist as well. But because my elbows were in such a mess, no one noticed, and they just naturally healed itself in the cast that I had to wear for my elbows. So worked out okay. But yeah, it was a pretty nasty injury. And originally they told me I would never wrestle again and I would have to give up my job. So that was kind of the push I needed to make sure that didn't happen, because I suppose that's one of the negatives of fitness instructing and wrestling being my whole life, is if I'm injured, I can't do either. So that was a tough thing to get around. But yeah, they said I'd never wrestle again. So what I did is basically changed hospitals and changed doctors. And I found a fantastic doctor in Dublin who specializes in people with sports injuries. It's like rugby players and like. And she told me that she'd have me wrestling again by the end of the year if I just did what she said. So I just did what she said. And she had me wrestling again in 9 months.
9 months.
Yeah, I actually went back training after 6 months. And then I made my first match back after 9 months, which is crazy when I think about it.
What is that experience like of coming back to wrestling after a long injury?
It's hard to describe. Because that year it was the hardest year of my life. Luckily, I kept very positive. And again, my parents are so supportive. I moved home because I needed 24-hour care for the first while. And it wouldn't have been fair on my boyfriend. And also, he had to keep working because I couldn't work. Mm-hmm. I moved home and there was some really hard days, you know, because I literally couldn't do anything for myself. But I just kept going. I got in touch with a really good physio in Dublin and just had the best support system ever and just pushed myself through. And the people in my wrestling school were so supportive as well. Like, they used to drive to my house on Friday nights with like snacks and stuff. So because I couldn't go out, so they would come to me and we would watch wrestling all night and just, you know, help me feel normal in such a weird situation. So when I debuted, again, it was a surprise. I hadn't even told most of the other wrestlers. And I was just doing a promo to set up a match down the line on OTT. When I came backstage, all my friends had lined up in the hallway and were clapping as I walked back. I just burst into tears. It was like 9 months had been just lifted off me. So much stress was just gone. And it's one of the best moments I've ever had in my life.
And the reaction from the crowd was pretty great too.
Oh, it was insane. I wasn't expecting it. I had this horrible fear all day where I just kept saying to people, what if they don't care? What if they don't care? And, you know, I had really worked myself up into a frenzy of like, you know, this is a long time to be gone and lots of things have happened. And, you know, but they cared more than I ever could have imagined.
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, there are so many documentaries and things out there about, you know, some of our favorite wrestlers. I mean, the one about Edge coming back was just like, I cried through basically the whole thing. But there are all these stories about wrestlers like with intense, like humongous fame with millions of people who love them all over the world who feel exactly the same way, right? When they're gone for a really long time, they're like, what if nobody cares? The whole industry has moved on without me and everything. But I think wrestling fans love a good story. And what better story than someone overcoming like gruesome injuries to, you know, staying focused and working hard and then coming back to the thing that they love. So it totally, also they love you. So like on top of everything else, it just, I understand where it comes from, but at the same time, I think it makes sense that people went absolutely mad when they saw you.
Yeah, they did. And it was really lovely. And even throughout the recovery, I hadn't posted anything about me being back training or even able to exercise. So some of the stuff I was putting on social media, I admit, was a little bit of a red herring. But I was just like, when else in my life? Well, I hope I never have another opportunity to do something like this and have like this kind of comeback. But yeah, it was really great. And like, you know, OTT were great as well. Like I won the title on my first match back in the same place where I'd broken my arms, which was such a nice full circle moment because the last time I'd been in that building, I'd been waiting to be taken to hospital. So that was a really nice full circle moment. There was 2,000 people there. My partner was there. My parents were there. And my friends had bought tickets. And the match was against my best friend as well. So I actually don't think I could have asked for like a better kind of comeback.
Yeah, that is awesome. So we are currently living in a world kind of without wrestling. When did you on your side have to start making decisions about what to do regarding the coronavirus and what you do for work?
I kind of used the guidelines from my day job to govern how we would do things in wrestling. And then our government was very proactive in shutting places down. So as soon as people start bringing in like social distancing and like sanitizing, we brought it into the wrestling gym and sanitized before and after training, checking if people are sick before they train. But then the Irish government just shut everybody down really, really quickly. So, you know, we have to follow the same procedures. We don't want anyone to get sick. We don't know who has vulnerable people at home or are vulnerable people themselves. So I think it was mid-March, we just shut down completely, both my day job and the wrestling gym.
So you've been out of work for like 6 weeks now.
My day job didn't handle the coronavirus great. They did offer to keep some of us on working in management, but it would involve going into our place of work every day, which didn't make sense because it's closed. and there's nothing that could have been done in there. So it was basically like, we'll pay you to come in and sit in the building for 40 hours a week. For me, that wasn't worth the risk traveling in and out on public transport. It's also breaking. We have a 2 kilometer rule in Ireland where you're not supposed to travel more than 2 kilometers from your home. So for me, the option to take a layoff was better. I felt it was safer. And again, the Irish government has handled it really well. So they've given anyone who is laid off from their job a really good stipend to get through the pandemic. It's what I'm getting is livable. So I decided just to stop completely. So it's been about 6 weeks now at home.
When you all made the decision, along with the guidelines of the government, to shut down the school, what were your feelings about what would happen next? Were you just like, okay, we're shutting down and we will figure out what we have to do once the lockdowns have been lifted? Or like, have you started planning how you might start to open up again when the time comes?
I already have a plan. First thing we did is we contacted our landlord and all the relevant people just to make sure that we're covered. The people in the school have been fantastic. Nearly all of them messaged me asking could they keep paying their fees even while the school is shut, which is incredible considering everything that's going on. But we said no, because if we can't provide a service, we don't want to take money. And again, you don't know what position you'll be in a month. We don't know how long this is going to last. So luckily, we were in a position where we were able to shut down. So what we're going to do is we're going to start like small fundraising things when it gets closer to being able to open back up. So I think our government are announcing today, actually, what their long term plan is to reopen the country. So we'll probably do small fundraising things. I don't want to just ask people for money. And again, I don't want to put our trainees under that kind of pressure. We have trainees from like age 14 up. You know what I mean? Some of them pay for training out of their pocket money. So that doesn't sit with me right. We'll do things like Twitch streams and quizzes, and then people can contribute what they want just so we have a cash flow to open back up. Aside from that, opening a wrestling school is going to be tough. And to be honest, for the first couple of weeks, definitely, maybe months, I think it's going to be more of a fitness class than a wrestling class. The way I can see it working is, okay, we've been in lockdown. Let's take a few weeks where we can be in the school, but we're going to have no contact training. There's still plenty we can do. We can work on lots and lots of things, you know. That's the way I see it working until maybe the end of summer at least. I don't see wrestling shows coming back locally until the end of the year at least.
So it sounds like not only do you have a good plan for what you're going to do next, but also even though your students are really young, that they understand the importance and the seriousness of the situation. Because like here in the States, I mean, obviously here in the States, we have all kinds of crazy people who do insane things, even when there isn't a global pandemic. But there was, you know, all this stuff right when the lockdowns are first starting about people complaining about not being able to travel for their spring break and stuff like that. It doesn't sound like the young people that you train don't understand how serious what's happening is, and that they would like freak out that they can't lock up on the first day back in the school.
Yeah, again, like I think Ireland has handled this really well. Now, the government we have is not a popular government, and they had actually just been overwhelmingly voted out before the pandemic. But yeah, that's a whole other thing. But I think they've handled it well. You know, people have been able to be laid off and still be able to pay their bills. They've put lots of things in place to help businesses reopen. And I think because they had such a quick and strong reaction to locking down, it made everyone, including the younger generation, realize how serious it was. Things in Ireland have got a little bit more lax this week because people are just bored of being home and they miss their family and they miss their friends. So there are more people on the streets. But we have guards everywhere, you know, asking people, you know, why are you out? Do you think that's a good enough reason to be outside your house? You know, they're being really proactive about it. So they are taking it very seriously, which gives me kind of a lot of hope that when we reopen, we'll be able to do it in gradual steps and we won't lose people, and that people will kind of abide by what we're saying.
How do you keep the boredom away?
I was joking that like I'm actually a pro at this now, because I spent all last year on lockdown too. And last year I didn't have the use of my arms. So this lockdown is already better for me. To be honest, I was kind of burning out a little bit because I'd worked so hard to get back wrestling, and I was back doing shows and I was back at work. And, you know, the first 2 weeks were glorious for me. I enjoyed being at home with my partner, and, you know, we painted our flat. We did a lot of DIY like everyone. And now the boredom is setting in a little bit. But now I'm doing kind of a lot more writing and content stuff for the wrestling school. And we're getting our merch store set up. So we're trying to use this time to do things to help us when we have to reopen the wrestling school. And aside from that, it's just nice to actually be able to go on a walk and listen to a podcast. It's nice to be able to read a book. So it hasn't been too bad. There's been a couple of down days. Or where I've gotten not necessarily bad news, but like, for example, a friend of mine had a baby 2 days ago and she had to go to hospital alone because of the restrictions. So stuff like that gets me upset hearing that. But then it just makes me even happier to just stay at home and just get this over with. That's the way it is in my head. We just need to get it over with. So just stay home, get through it. And I think a lot of people have that mentality in Ireland, which is really good.
Are your friend and her baby healthy?
They are. They're actually home now. She just sent me a picture before I came to talk to you. It's just a scary experience because her husband wasn't allowed in with her, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's an odd situation. People don't know how to navigate it. People don't know if you're being too cautious by doing something like that, like not allowing a husband into a hospital, or have you just potentially saved someone? Nobody really knows.
I mean, we're all... It's funny because I feel like the phrase that I hear a lot is we're all just doing the best that we can. But in reality, like, that phrase is extremely true because nobody has like the perfect answer, right? Nobody has the absolute end all solution for how to keep everyone safe and, you know, make this thing go away. So we're all just trying to use our best judgment. I would hope anyway that we all are. I can't speak for everyone, but that we're trying to use our best judgment to keep people as safe as possible, especially really vulnerable people like brand new little babies who haven't been around more than a couple of days. So I understand that. I've heard other people's stories as well about like being so upset that they have to go to a hospital when they thought when they got pregnant that a hospital would be the safest place for them. And now they just don't feel that way anymore. And it's very upsetting. But at the same time, I'm so glad that so many people are doing the right thing and getting to take their family home safely at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you want is just, you know, everyone to be safe. So if it means that we all just have to go without, you know, going to the pub for a few weeks or whatever. Actually, you know what? That's when everyone in Ireland knew it was serious, the day the pubs got shut. That's when there was a ripple through the community and people were like, oh, we better go home. Because originally the pubs weren't part of the lockdown. They just shut down like the first wave of businesses. And everyone's reaction was to go straight to the pub, to the point where like Temple Bar was overspilling with people. So the government shut the pubs down, and that's when everyone was like, okay, let's take this seriously.
It is interesting to me living in the States to hear the reaction of people from other countries, right? I was listening to a podcast call-in show where someone who was living in Paris was talking about when they started to close businesses down, everybody poured into the streets to like cafes and bars and things to talk about how awful it was that they were keeping people out of other places. And he was like, I just could not wrap my head, because I think the guy who was talking was from Australia, and he was saying like, I feel like I'm in a social experiment in which I get to experience what the French are really like. And that's no dig at the French, but that like their reaction to something strange, unusual, or catastrophic is to like come together, which is like the exact opposite of what you want to have happen at a time like this. But that is who they are as a people. And so it's kind of similar in Ireland, that everyone rushed to the pub to talk about what was going on, but it was like, no, we don't want you to do this, please stop and go home.
Yeah, like we're such a social people. Like even now when I said like people are getting more lax the last week, people are just going to each other's gardens to have beers. They're 6 feet away, but you know what I mean? Like, or they're going on walks together, or they're meeting up in the park for workouts, all 6 feet away. But it's just, I think we crave interaction, and we just crave talking to each other, you know? And we crave being together, which is why I think after 6 weeks, it's starting to get a bit more lax, which is why I think they're actually going to extend our lockdown today to another 2 weeks and then start to lift. But yeah, I think it's just human nature that when something goes wrong, you want to talk about it.
And also people just crave the sense of community, because that gives you, even if it's a false sense of safety, some kind of sense of safety, right? When you're with your tribe, your group of people, and then you're like, oh, we all think this is messed up, so it must be messed up. And I feel secure in feeling that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, even now I'm not really seeing people because I'm in lockdown, but I've probably called people and done so many video calls. Like, and it's funny because I did a video call with two of my friends in Scotland, and halfway through I was like, okay, so we're on a video call to each other because we're on lockdown. I was like, we've never video called each other before, and we live in different countries. But because we're on lockdown, it's like, I need to connect with everyone in my circle right now to make sure everyone's okay. Like, we talk on the phone all the time, we visit each other, but we've never done a video call. And I don't know why it took a lockdown to make that connection.
It's so funny because, like, I feel like everybody's experiencing this simultaneously. It's the people you suddenly are calling every week or every other week that you used to only talk to every few months, or using video calls instead of just a phone conversation. It's like, all of these things existed before the coronavirus. I don't know why we needed this to sort of encourage us to try other forms of communication and connect more. But I think part of it is also, when you have the ability to see someone's face, you feel more connected to them, right? So, like, knowing that you might see your friends in Scotland soon, you're not as kind of desperate to see their faces and, like, know that they're okay, versus now you really want that kind of, like, proof. Okay, you're fine. I see your face, even though you have bedhead or whatever, like, it's fine. And so I can understand that, like, yeah, all right, well, now we're going to do video chat. I'm curious to see what happens afterwards. Like, do we all just go back to the way that we used to be? Or are we all going to, like, keep bothering each other as often as possible? Just be like, are you okay over there? You good? Let me see your face. You're cool? Okay, your face is still there. I'm good. Talk to you later. Goodbye.
I was thinking about this the other day, and, like, I was just saying that I hope this is something that does continue. Maybe not with the frequency that I'm doing video calls and stuff like that, but, you know, just the connection and like, the video calls is cool. Like with my friends in Scotland, like, I actually had to cancel a trip to Scotland because of the pandemic. Like, it was really nice talking to them on video chat. Like, I'd be happy to do that even every couple of months, just to touch base, you know? So I do hope it's something that we keep doing when this is all over. And even things I've been doing at home and stuff, like, every day I've been walking to a different part of where I live that I've never seen before. And I've been taking pictures of interesting things on the street. Like, I hope that's something I keep doing when I have more options, because it's been really good for me to just put do not disturb on my phone, put something on to listen to and wander. I've felt great after it. So I hope we pick up good habits now that we keep going with.
Yeah, because I think the things we're using to soothe the chaotic moments in our heads right now are things that might be useful to soothe the chaotic moments in our everyday life. So, like you just said, the walking, because I walk usually in the middle of the day. I have a very large dog that I take out for a walk around lunchtime, and I don't look at my phone. I just go out and walk, cold weather, hot weather, you know, unless it's pouring rain, then we don't go out because he's very fluffy and I don't want to have to deal with wet dog afterwards. But generally, being out for a walk really clears my head. And even if I was in an office, like, taking the time, I could eat at my desk and use my lunch break to take a walk around the block. That would be a great way to kind of, like, reset me for the second half, because the second half of the day is always the worst. That's the part of the day where you're, like, full of lunch and you just wish you could take a nap, and it's like a struggle to get through afternoon phone calls or whatever you have going on. So I think that's, I totally agree with you. I hope that we take some of the things that we're using to take care of ourselves now into what happens next.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. And even things as simple as when I was working, I did a lot of shift work, so I would often not be home until 11 o'clock or half 11, having dinner at midnight, going to bed at 2 a.m. because I have to read or watch TV to unwind. Whereas like now, I'm having dinner at like 6 o'clock. You know, I'm getting up at half nine. You know, it's I hope to get into better schedules because, you know, that's not good for me, having dinner at midnight every night, you know. And even though I work in a gym, my food was terrible. You know, my eating was terrible. I didn't cook because I never felt I had time because I was getting up at half 10 to be in work for half 11 and then work straight through, you know. So even things like learning how to cook more, I hope that's something I take out of here. So I think one of the ways I've been getting through this as well is looking at the small positives like that I can take away. Like I've had time to just kind of learn new stuff, to reconnect and to just maybe almost detox. Not a digital detox. I've been on social media way too much. That's the next thing I have to tackle. But, you know, just to kind of like detox and take everything down a level, because, you know, you get like a week's holiday from work. Often by the time you're fully relaxed, it's time to start thinking about going back again. So, you know, there's advantages to being locked down.
It's funny because I am still working because my job allows me to work remotely. I know a lot of people who feel like this whole lockdown process has been like the opposite side of chaos for them, because when you work from home, people just never leave you alone. Basically, they're like, oh, you're working from home and you're in your home all the time, which means you're available all the time. It's like, no, that's not how that works. But at the same time, when you have control over, because like if I really wanted to, I could just close my computer and walk away. That would be bad and I would not have a job for very much longer. But at the same time, like nobody's watching to see how many times I get up to go to the bathroom or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like if I get up to go get a snack or just go into another room and sit down for a couple of minutes and just look out the window and breathe, nobody's going to be like, what are you doing? How come you're not working? You just staring out the window? Are you okay? You having some kind of attack or something? It's like, no, I just need a break. Like there's, you know, trying to find those ways that you can do something positive for yourself and then take note of how it's making you feel so that maybe you can carry some of those habits over is a really great, that's a really great idea. And I hope lots of people end up doing that.
Yeah, actually, I was talking to my friend who is still working as well, asking her how she's coping. And she's like keeping her 9-to-5 schedule. And I was like, oh, cool. So nothing's really changed for you. And she was like, the lack of social obligations has been really nice for a while. You know, so she's still getting that little bit of downtime in the evenings where she doesn't feel like she has to like go out and socialize. So luckily she's developed, you know, a few really good habits as well. My heart goes out to the people who are trying to like, maybe there's two people working in the same house, which I know is hard, or like are juggling childcare and stuff in the middle of all this. And my one wish is I just hope that their bosses are understanding, you know, about productivity levels and stuff, because that is the flip side of this. If you're trying to work from home as well, is I imagine it can be chaotic.
Those are the only people I have sympathy for when they email me at 9 o'clock at night, right? Because when those people email me, first of all, they know I'm not going to answer them and they don't care. I'll answer them first thing when I get up the next morning. But the fact that they're emailing me at 9 o'clock at night indicates to me that that was the first free time that they got to themselves to actually sit down and look at their email. And I have a coworker who has 2 children under the age of 3. I cannot even wrap my head around what it must be like in her house every single day. And for anybody out there who doesn't have sympathy for people like that, you have to understand that is not the world that they lived in when they brought those children into the world. Like there were systems in place that children went to daycare or whatever nursery programs and they went to work. And now none of that is happening, and trying to adjust to a life where your children are just in your house every day, all day, that is not the mindset that you were in when you had them. So trying to figure out how to make all of that stuff work, that is like a chaos level that my brain is starting to melt down even thinking about it.
Yeah. And like, it's even trying to explain what's going on to the kids as well. Like my brother has a 2-year-old and she keeps asking to go see Nanny and Granddad. You know, how do you explain to a 2-year-old you have to stay in the house and we can't play now because I have to do this, and it's while I'm finding it quite peaceful at the moment, like my heart does go out to everyone dealing with it. And when the restrictions are lifted, the first thing I'm going to do is take my niece for 2 days and tell my brother to go enjoy himself. So yeah, maybe if we could all just be conscious of everyone around us, and when this is all lifted, cut them some slack, I think would be great.
Yeah, when you just see parents running in the streets when the lockdown has been lifted, understand what they're just trying to get all their energy out after being cooped up.
My brother sent me a video. He plays on a football team, and they've been doing their coaching online. So he was doing his workout online on Zoom with the rest of his team, and he was in a down dog position, and all of a sudden his daughter has crawled under him and is doing down dog on the camera as well. And it's like he can't even get 30 minutes to do his workout. Now, it's very cute her trying to copy the yoga poses, but at the same time I was just like, oh my god, you just must be just, you need a break.
So all things considered, it sounds like you have some things that you're staying focused on so that you're prepared when it comes time to open the school and things back up. Since you took the unemployment for the gym, do you know what will happen next? Will you have to like find another job, or are you hoping that when they open back up, like you might go back to work there?
So one of the nice things was I got to have part of the process and what's going to happen when we reopen. So basically we provided all our staff with letters to say their job was guaranteed when we reopened. So I felt really good as a manager that that's something I could provide in this time and be like, I can't guarantee what hours you'll get, but I can guarantee you'll have a job when we're able to reopen. So my job is there. On the flip side, this has given me a lot of time to think about whether I want to go back to it or not. Again, because I've done shift work since I was 15 and I've always worked weekends, now I'm kind of like, you know what? It's nice having 2 days off in a row. It's nice being home at 5 or 6 o'clock. So it's actually kind of making me reevaluate if it's a situation I want to go back into full time. So, which is a weird thing that I didn't expect to happen. I really like my job, but there are parts of it that I don't like. And I'm not entirely happy with how my company handled all of the coronavirus stuff. So yeah, I will go back and I'll see how I feel. I might try to bring some of my positive changes back to work. You know, I might talk to my boss about maybe finishing earlier or changing my hours or changing my shifts around. Because I actually really am valuing this free time. But yeah, I will go back. It's just a matter of when and when I'll be allowed and what I'll be allowed to do. Because, you know, when I go back, I don't know if I'll be allowed to teach fitness classes, which was my favorite part of the job. I don't know, will I have to cut staff? I don't know, will I have to... I don't know the ins and outs of it. I just know that as soon as the Irish government says we will be reopening, and I imagine it will be in phases as well. Like just before we shut, we were doing the whole, you know, only a certain amount of people allowed in. If you're not training with a towel or we catch you not sanitizing the equipment, you're out of here. So I imagine we'll reopen back like that and then just slowly expand on the other side.
Wow. That's, yeah. What is the thing that you're most anxious to get back to? Is it the school? Is it your own wrestling?
It's the school. With my own wrestling, it was a weird thing where I only came back at the very end of October. So I was only actually back for 4 months before this all kicked in. So in my head, I hadn't actually gotten back properly yet. You know, I'd done OTT, I'd done my shows and a couple of others, but most of my bookings were for May, June and July. So I kind of feel like I've been out of my own career for the last year and a half anyway. So for me, it's about getting the school back up and running. And again, because we have a lot of young trainees and it's the biggest thing in their lives. And it's, you know, something really positive in their lives. Like we train 4 times a week. So I know some of them are really struggling, not having training, not being around their friends, not having wrestling. So I would want to get that open as soon as possible.
So Katie, where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk to you about your wrestling school, your own wrestling, or just anything in general?
Oh, the wrestling school's name is Fight Factory Pro Wrestling, if they want to check that out. If you're in Ireland or you travel to Ireland and want to train, hit us up. Or then I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook just under my own name,
which is Katie Harvey. Well, this has been a really wonderful and kind of like de-stressing way to start my day. I know you're halfway through yours at this point, but this is a lovely way to begin my Friday. This has been a wonderful chat. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, friends, that's it. For a little while anyway, that's the last of the wrestling episodes. There are a lot of people in my life who share wrestling as a common hobby and interest, and we will definitely hear from more of those wonderful humans in the future. But if you want a refresher on any of my wrestling friends that I've spoken to already, I recommend starting with episode 1 with Courtney the Librarian. She was, after all, my Face Lock Feministas co-host. Episode 8 with Stella the Doer, and episode 9 with Aaron the Balancer. We met Stella and Aaron because they were also co-hosts of a female-hosted wrestling podcast. Also, check out episode 12 with Justine the Self-Starter, who works with Riptide Wrestling out of Brighton in the UK, and episode 19 with Matt the Gentleman. What have I been up to during lockdown? Excellent question. I'd suggest checking out jordanrizzieri.com. That's JordanRizzieri.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Rizzieri and Instagram at The Lady J Slays. Don't miss a single future episode by making sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or hitting follow on Spotify. Next week's episode is a wonderful chat about making a big career change. You won't want to miss it. Until then, bye.